Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for coming. My name is Giovanni Gerdovic. I am a SUSE employee based in Prague, Czech Republic. And of interest for this talk are pluggable CPU schedulers in OpenSUSE. View express disclaim, I am required to tell you that the opinion expressed here belongs solely to me and do not reflect the views of my employer. This is because the company has not decided how to approach this particular technology. I am personally enthusiastic about it, and so I have built the tumbleweed packages and I am experimenting with it and telling people what can be done with it, but I'm here in the capacity of a community member. So what are we talking about? CPU scheduler, that is the part of the kernel that is responsible for deciding where the applications, the user mode application runs, where, which means on which CPU, when, so when does it start and for how long, so how long is the time slice. So this is the task scheduler, the kernel scheduler. And in Linux, there are essentially a few scheduler. I would say three: the deadline, the real time, and the fair scheduler. This last one is the most used by the one you get by default. But with this particular kernel patch, which is not merged in the upstream kernel, you have the opportunity to write your own task scheduler as a loadable BPF program. BPF, for those who are not familiar, is a particular virtual machine that runs in the kernel and performs some checks on the code. You make sure, it's like a kernel module, but you can't crash the machine with a BPF module. So it's more restricted, more secure, and it allows a great degree of customizability. So you can write your scheduler in BPF, and you load your scheduler, and you don't need to reboot. And you can switch them at runtime. So why would you want to do that? Why is the kernel, the scheduler that we get from the kernel not good enough? Well, there are a few motivations for this project, which I should say is not my work. This is a patch that in this particular instance has been written by Meta, which is the company that runs Facebook, and also other companies are interested in contributing to it. Anyway, so this is not my work. I'm telling you something that I have experimented with. So why would you want to do that? So it is what are the advantages that you can have by writing your own scheduler? Well, it is good for students. They would have an easy way to make changes to a core component of the kernel and see their effect rapidly, immediately, without needing to recompile. Then it's useful for researchers who want to do experiments, test new algorithms, and see what they do. And also, it is of great interest for performance. And why? Because if you can write your own little program that does scheduling, you can afford to make it specific to your workload. So if you are, I don't know, doing gaming, you can observe and trace and instrument how your video game is using your machine. And then you make a task scheduler that is optimized for that. And then you would say, okay, but this scheduler is good for my game and maybe it's not good for when I surf the internet. Yeah, sure, but for surfing the internet, you may have a different scheduler. So if you enter this paradigm where the scheduler can be specific to the thing that you're actually doing and it doesn't need to be to serve a variety of tasks, of applications, then you could possibly squeeze more efficiency out of your hardware. So this is the slide that essentially I came here for. You can read about this particular patch online. It has been described by the trade press, blogs, etc. What I did for this presentation is I made a tumbleweed kernel with this change. And this is the link to the OBS project, which, so this is a repo where you would download a kernel that has this patch in it, right? Now, I'm not an experienced packager, and I, as you can see, the project is called sked-x-4 because it was my fourth attempt on that day to have it running. So this, I expect to have a better URL for my project, but this works. I mean, it has an ugly name, but you can install this repo and you get a kernel you can experiment with today. Since the project is likely, as I said, going to change URL, I have created a page on the wiki, on the OpenSUSE wiki, where I will, and I think this link is maybe more important than the OBS one, which is going to change. I expect this link to stay there, and I will write progress and the new URL. So bookmark the link. You see what I mean? The OBS project is working, but I probably changed the name. Then other links. This is the kernel tree, which is not the repository of Linus Torvalds. Is the repository of the author of this particular change. You can see it here. TJ. This gentleman is called Tejon Hell. It's a Meta employee. So this is his tree. And this goes together with some user space code, toolchain, etc., because those BPF programs are not in the kernel. You write them while you run your machine, and then you load them. So there is some there is a toolbox that is on this GitHub repository. And now I'm getting ahead of myself, but once you have this framework that exposes hooks to BPF, you can write your scheduler in BPF, or you can do something else, which is have essentially a shim, a very light BPF program that simply exposes the data to user space. And then your scheduling logic can live in user space. And there is a framework for that in this GitHub repo. And you would have a user space scheduler. This framework is in Rust, and so you can write your scheduler in Rust and use the change, build, and run workflow that is familiar with user space coding. You don't have to, you know, reboot the machine, etc. So this is those are valuable links, and this is an important slide. I have like 10 or 15, but this is a slide that I would like to stress. So now let's. I would like to introduce you to, if you're not familiar, to scheduling in general. So, what is the business of scheduling tasks or threads? So threads can be running or sleeping. Okay. So if they're running, they are in one of those two circles. Can be running in kernel mode or user mode. You typically are in user mode, then you call a syscall and you go in kernel mode. Okay. But at some point, when you are in kernel mode, sometimes you wait for the disk, or you try to acquire a lock, which is not available. So you need to relinquish the CPU because you have to wait for something. And this is called going to sleep. So you get out of the CPU, and you're waiting for your disk, you're waiting for your network, etc. At some point, the resource is available, and you become runnable. So you are runnable, and you are in the run queue of the CPU. So now you are here and you're waiting to get a CPU. And the scheduler is the part that gets you a CPU. So you get out of the kernel from here, but you also can get out of the kernel from this other arrow. So when the resource is available here, you are going to sleep, and getting back is called waking up. Okay? But this couple of arrows here, it's called preemption. So your time slice is over. Even if you run, there are other programs, that other threads that need to run, and the scheduler does this arbitration. And so this is what scheduling is about. Now, where is the scheduler? Like, is there a program called scheduler? No, it's a function of the kernel, and it's called the schedule. And it is invoked at a defined set of points during the life cycle of your program, which is, I mentioned that your user space code can invoke a syscall. When the syscall is over, the kernel invokes the scheduler. That's a convenient point to invoke the scheduler. There's another thing, another canonical point to invoke the scheduler, which is when an interrupt handler is over. So interrupts is keys on the keyboard, packets on the network, whatever. That happens all the time. There is also a timer interrupt, a recurrent one. And interrupt is a hardware concept. The CPU rises this trap. And then you execute some code. Essentially, your user code is interrupted, and the kernel does something. When the kernel is done, it says, wait a minute, I could do something else, which is invoke the scheduler. So this is where the schedule, be it the kernel one or the one that you write in BPF, is invoked. When the scheduler is invoked, it needs to choose tasks, and it goes in. It searches for the scheduler classes. It searches for threads in what are called classes. So there are three, and the fourth one is the one that we're discussing today, the ext or external class. Oops, what happened? Okay. So the scheduler goes over those classes and look for tasks. So it goes in the most urgent one, which is called deadline. Is there anything to do in deadline? No? Okay, next one. Is there anything to do in real time? No, next one. Is there anything to do in fair? Oh yes, I have a thread in fair. So it picks a thread in fair. At the next iteration of the scheduler, it's gonna go again doing this search starting from the top. So is there anything to do in deadline? Is there anything to do in real time? This is important because it means that if you have stuff, if one of those classes that are higher up in this list is populated, you never get to the one on the top, on the bottom, right? Those are more urgent. I'm saying this because our BPF scheduler is not in a very good position, as you can see, it's the last one. So this was a way for the developers to say, we're being nice, okay? So our code does not take over your machine. Our code actually never runs, because if you have a task in the fair class, external is never invoked, right? So having it on complete equivalence with fair, which is the default class, would have been more complex. So what they did was, okay, we're gonna put it below fair, and if you want to make any sort of use of our framework, you have to set this config option that says we're gonna take over fair. So your BPF scheduler, if you have this config option that makes it usable at all, will vacuum all the fair tasks or threads and take care of them. The deadline and real time, they stay there. So the deadline and real time are still serviced. There are important threads in real time. Some kernel threads are there, so you don't want to mess with them. But the schedext is, to be useful, it's gonna take all the fair with it. What does it look like writing a scheduler in with this framework? Well, you have to provide several callbacks, right? And those callbacks correspond to the action, to the events that the scheduler can do. So select the CPU. So where am I putting my task? In queue, so put the task in that runnable state we were discussing. And so there are all these, each of those callbacks correspond to an action of this sort of state machine that the scheduler is. But your algorithm will live in those callbacks. So that is the the framework that what provides it. And then you have, those are all functions, function pointers, and here you have some flags. I don't recall exactly what they are. Timeout is important. Timeout is in milliseconds, and it regulates the operation of a watchdog that is a safety, a fail-safe mechanism. If your scheduler is not very good and is not scheduling, so it is not putting any task on the CPU for more than, I don't know, 5 seconds, then the framework will remove, will unload your scheduler and fall back to the default Linux scheduler. Yes, so this is in line with this with BPF, essentially, as a technology regulating and limiting the damage that you can do with bad code, essentially. And then there is the name that you can give to your scheduler. And when I mentioned user space scheduling, so this is also possible, as I discussed. The framework would only expose the data to user space, and you would have a user space executable in Rust if you use the framework that is gaining some traction in this project. And you have, well, first off, since it's a user space scheduler, you have to schedule the scheduler, but this is done in the framework, but it's an interesting thought. The other thing, when people think of user space scheduling, is that the first thought that you have, if you have some familiarity with kernel programming, is that, okay, there is data that is going back and forth between kernel mode and user mode, and in order to read that data, which is, for example, to know what is the content of my run queue or to know what my tasks are doing, I have to talk to the kernel, which means issue a syscall, which is an expensive operation. And you say, wait a second, so for every context switch that you do, you have to call, to have a syscall? That defies the purpose of performance, and it seems like it would grind the machine to a halt. Well, this particular frame, the SCHEDXT, as it is called, this project, works around this limitation by poking into the boundaries between kernel and user mode. There are two ring buffers that are offered by BPF. One is to send data from kernel to user, which is something that you may have seen in other contexts. For example, there is a tool called ftrace or a tool called perf, the profiler, and you have all this kernel data that you see in those ring buffers. So looking at kernel data from user space, okay. Sending data from the user to the kernel on user-initiated interaction, well, that didn't exist. And they made this other way, the user versus kernel ring buffer, explicitly for this use case. It's not a coincidence that the SCHEDXT developer work at Meta, and the BPF developers, most of them, the maintainer, they also work at Meta, so they essentially collaborate tightly into this development. So we are now 4:18, and those are the big questions. So this is the other slides that that I want to attract your attention on. The first one was the links. So there is this package that I made, and more importantly, the wiki page, which contains some directions on how to get started. And this is the other slide that is, let's consider the implication of what's going on here, because writing your own task scheduler, okay, that is opening a wide range of challenges and opportunities. So the first, so I listed 5 items as I see them, and I would like your feedback if you have, or your thought. So the first one is, I call it quality, which is people are going to write their own scheduler. Maybe as a distro, you want to have some way for the scheduler that people write to evaluate their quality, but I'm not talking of correctness. We have seen the watchdog that takes care of that. I mean, the scheduler doesn't schedule, you're out, fine. But I'm talking about quality of service, so something more soft. But can I quantify, and you can, but you have to write the tests, and it's a hard work. Can you quantify the 10 minutes, yes. Can you quantify the starvation or the fairness of your scheduler or the work conservation. It's a property that means that if you have some work to do, you don't have any CPU idle, because that would be counterproductive. There is something to do and there is resources unused. Work conservation. So can I measure that and test all the... We saw that those scheduler likely are going to be application specific or workload specific, but you also want to make sure that they are still can service the rest of the applications. I make my server for my scheduler for the video game that I like, but I would like the web browser to still run on it, even if very slowly, but that it provides a degraded service. And so this is quality support. There are going to be bugs opened, and the user that opened those bugs may have a third-party scheduler running. So as an incident responder, be community or employees such as myself, you're going to see some of the system you know and some of the system you don't know. So, okay, you're going to ask them, let's reproduce without your custom scheduler. Okay, that could work, but maybe not. Maybe removing the scheduler will simply not show any issue, yet the issue was not in the scheduler. It was simply a combination of factors. So that's what I call support. This is something that I consider this an aspect deserving some thought. Then there is trust. You will have to start shipping some BPF modules, for example, the sample schedulers, or we were talking about user space scheduling. You need that shim, that thin shim that of BPF, and that's going to be a module. You're probably going to sign that so that there is an attestation. The user can be sure of the provenance of this code. How do you sign BPF executables? Honestly, I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know. But that's something to be figured out. There are. I'm not the first one person thinking about signing BPF executables, but I don't see an established practice, so I'm not. Toolchain, all right. They're going to be mostly tapping into the Rust ecosystem quite a lot, because the user space scheduler that I mentioned, the framework is in Rust. Rust, we have Rust expertise in the community, but packaging it, so Rust doesn't do shared objects, right? It doesn't shared libraries. So I don't know. You have the building of a Rust program necessarily pulls from all the dependencies, and we have efforts in that respect, but this is going to be another user, another client of that sort of effort. LLVM, libbpf, fast moving target, that would be how you write BPF programs. And finally, process, which is how do you get this kernel in the hands of people? I was thinking a separate kernel flavor in Tumbleweed, which is what I'm trying to do. I mean, until there is more traction in this respect, this is an initiative of a few individuals such as myself. So, I mean, freestanding OBS project somewhere. And so those are the items. I am at 4:24. I mean, I'm told that I should be sharp on time. I have a couple of more slides, but they're not really that important. So I would open the floor for questions and remarks. Thank you very much for your attention. I would want to say something, Jeff, or?
Yeah, I have a question.
Ah, okay. So there is a mic circulating.
So what do you see for end users wanting to use this? I mean, for companies like Meta, they have a clearly defined workload and a staff to support it. But for like OpenSUSE users or SUSE users, the idea is that they don't have to worry about that stuff. That's our job. So what do you see as the use case for this?
I see the thinker, the ecosystem of people who wants to understand the operating system and at an intimate level and do that kind of experiments. So education and research at the personal level. I don't expect. I don't know. I mean, who knows? But at least the initial traction, I think, will be driven by the curiosity of something that was not previously accessible.
I mean, I could see, for example, like a major database company that has an interest in scheduling performance on their own products would probably be interested in injecting their own scheduler to handle that. And that's, I think, where the signing comes in handy, because then you could say, you know, this vendor is allowed to load these modules and they provide it as one of their own modules as part of their software, and they can control the scheduler without having to hack the kernel to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're tapping into the commercial and the market and the industry adoption for this. At that point, I think the support issue becomes relevant, because you start to have those mixed systems, and you have to have at least a process to quickly understand if the problem is in the vendor vendor code, which would be SUSE in that case, and or the user code, which so core kernel or custom scheduler, and you need to learn how to do that weeding quickly.
Sure. I mean, my first thought when I saw that support line is like, man, that's going to be a nightmare. But if with trusted executables, if they're provided by, you know, a third party, then that's something that we could work through.
I see the support being difficult even with trusted BPF modules, because trusted or not trusted, performance regression, scheduler we don't know, and we have to spend effort in proving that our kernel is doing its job, and they're likely going to wait for the outcome of our proof before they look into their scheduler. So even if it was a trusted scheduler, trust is going to be necessary for them to... Maybe you can explain me better the relationship, or we can talk about it.
Sure. I mean, from my perspective, if you have it as it's no different than a third-party kernel module, for example. And now we expect vendors to sign them. And when we see one of those, it gets tagged as saying, hey, you know, you have a third-party module loaded. And, you know, at least commercially, when we're supporting it, if that is flagged, then if it looks related to the issue at hand, then we say, hey, go ask the vendor who gave you this, because it looks like it's suspicious. And I would think in a similar situation, if we ended up seeing one of these loaded and it was a performance issue, we do the same thing.
Yeah, I have had this conversation several times, and people tell me it depends how important the situation is, and there is never... This is the first thing you do, but it doesn't always work, and this is what several people in the support department, etc., are concerned about. Yeah. But yes, definitely, this is the first thing you say. This is not our... It's tainted. Goodbye. Yeah.
On the other hand, I see lots of possibilities for research and trying out new scheduler IDs, and I guess not for production, but we will see lots of experiments, and that's good.
Yes, very good.
It definitely lowers the barrier.
Yes, totally.
That was mainly. It definitely lowers the barrier to entry for people looking to experiment.
100%, yes, this is exactly why I like it. Thanks very much for your attention, and enjoy the rest of the conference.